Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hello, welcome. I'm Dr. Deborah.
Hi, it's Therapist Kelly. How is your cat?
Oh my gosh, I don't know who's more stressed, my cat or me. So I decided that it was probably going to be best to take him to the vet because they need to get, they got a blood sample, but they couldn't get a urine sample, which would help to determine whether he has the preliminary kidney disease because something showed up a little bit off in his blood. So yesterday, you know, I had arranged my schedule to be able to take him and sit with him there. The bugger pees in the cat carrier on the way there.
Oh.
So, of course, he cannot pee when he's there. So they have to hydrate him. 4 hours later, still had not peed. Took him home. He's very upset. He hates the car. Took him back this morning. He has been there since 8:15 this morning, Pacific time. And so we're going on 5 hours, and they're doing the same thing. And that little stubborn dude, he's not doing it.
So that's why
we have to get this.
That's why Dr. Deborah is remote today, because her poor cat is ill. But as a special guest, we have my amazing good friend, Christina Pappas, who is here. And also, complete surprise, my son Remy is with us because his ear was hurting and the Jewish mom that I am just got roped in and he came along. So that's where it's going to be an interesting show. And then we'll talk about our in-studio guest in a minute, which is super, super exciting. So, Christina, do you want to tell us a little bit about your weekend?
Sure, I will. So, very happy to be here. Kelly and I met last year. Our older sons are in third grade together, and then we soon realized that our younger children are in the same class as well. So, this weekend we had our TK Kinder picnic at one of the parks in the valley. So we braved the 187 degree weather. But it was a great little time to meet people and do a bunch of arts and crafts and
stuff. And what about you, Deborah? Besides the cat, was your weekend okay?
We did have a great weekend, actually. This was a fun-filled time in Del Mar, near San Diego.
Oh, right.
My friend who lives down there in Encinitas, right? Encinitas, yeah. So we stayed down there, and we we went to the track. I know you hate that, but we had a great time on Saturday with my other friends, Matt and Angela. Mm-hmm. And it was just great. It was great company. The weather was delightful. We walked over 10 miles each day, some on the beach and some just in town, because you know me, I love to do that.
Yeah.
So it was good. Yeah, we really had a really, really good time. How about you?
I had a testosterone-filled weekend. It started with taking London to karate and then Remy to Boy Scouts. Uh-huh. So on Monday, I'm like, that's it. I need estrogen. I got a facial. I'm like, I just got to wash off all the male energy and have some female energy. But it was good. Remy, what do you have to say? How was your weekend?
Well, it was all right. It's like last weekend, it's like I saw some stuff. It's like I went to Boy Scouts.
Uh-huh.
And we went on the trampoline at Boy Scouts.
Oh, yeah. That was his favorite part.
Trampoline. Wow. Now, do they still have badges in Boy Scouts? Like you have, yeah. So how many badges have you received?
You can answer.
It's like, it's like you get badges. Well, they did this group for 4 years, so like you get a badge. It's my last weekend. It was like my first time at Boy Scouts. We might go camping. We might not.
It's so cute. It's so cool having him here. It really is. It's kind of cool.
It is.
I know.
Were you disappointed that you didn't get to go on the overnight camping?
Yeah, when we remember we were supposed to go camping that other time. Were you disappointed?
No.
I think I scared him because I said...
That's okay, because you're going to have much more fun with us when we all go camp again. Remember how much fun that was?
London asked if he can have an Airstream like Dr. Deborah has. So...
Oh, my God.
He thinks that's yours, number one, and
so
he wants
funny.
One. So
I wish
thank you.
I owned it.
Yeah, exactly. All right, well, let's talk about last week, and then we can't wait to talk about our in-studio guest. So... Our last week guest was Robert Williams. He is the author of Love is the Power. Really, really great show.
And I'm blanking on.
Was great, and I was actually reading his book more in depth. It's really beautiful. You know, I think that more of us need to just harness in on the power of the love that we all have in our hearts and find compassion and love for people. You know, instead of all this hatred and rage. Which actually, you know, just for a moment too, I just want to put a shout out for of hope and prayer for all the victims in Hurricane Harvey and the devastation that's going on in, you know, southern and eastern Texas.
Yes.
Just very tragic.
I agree. Yeah, I think his
book came
out. Get
love in your hearts, everybody, and there are places to donate to help out. I think the Red Cross and various other organizations. So I just think that would be great. You know, 50 cents, a dollar, $5, whatever you can afford.
Yeah, absolutely. So yeah, his book came at a perfect time. So today, I'm super, super excited to introduce Samantha Ettis. She is the author of The Pie Life, a guilt-free recipe for success and satisfaction. She's a renowned work-life wellness expert, and she inspires corporate cultures and increases employee retention and productivity through her executive workshops and keynotes. Thousands of professionals from C-level leaders to administrative assistants have benefited from Sam's unique guidance on how to maximize work-life success. She finds that spark within each one of us and turns it into a fire. Since earning her undergraduate and MBA degrees from Harvard, Sam has become a best-selling author of 5 books, a writer for Forbes, a renowned speaker and host of a nationally syndicated call-in radio show. Sam's most recent book, The Pie Life, A Guilt-Free Recipe for Success and Satisfaction, was published last fall. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
We're super, super excited. So as you can see, we're doing the work-life balance here a little bit, right?
Isn't that funny? Take your son to work day, my favorite.
Yes,
I love it.
Exactly. So we have so many questions for you. So my first question is it really possible to have a work-family life balance?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it's about managing your life in a way that makes you feel fulfilled. So after working with thousands of women, what I have found is that there's patterns among the most successful, most fulfilled women. And that is that they have some semblance of a career that they maintain. They have their foot in the door of a lot of different slices. They're focused on their health, on their family, on their career, on their friends, on their hobbies, and their communities. And being involved in all of those areas leads them to have a fulfilling life. And there's this myth, especially as women, we can be perfectionist about things, and we sometimes think that if we're just focused on one or two slices and we just spend all of our time in those areas, we can perfect them.
Yes.
But that's just not the case. So what we'll see is a really high achieving woman thinking, okay, I can't do it all. I can't have the great career at my law firm and be a great mom, so I'm just going to quit the law firm and just be a mom. And that person, just because she has a child, doesn't mean that she suddenly lost all of her ambition and doesn't have an inner drive to reach her goals and do things on her own. And so, unfortunately, what ends up happening is that a lot of that energy gets put into her kids, and she doesn't feel the same fulfillment as she used to. And so what I've seen over and over again is that sort of the happiest, healthiest among us are those that really have something going on continuously with their career, whether it's just keeping their foot in the door part-time or having a full career like they used to. It's an element that we often don't talk about.
Sure.
There certainly are some careers that probably allow for more flexibility than others. So let's say somebody's in a career that has very limited conscientiousness about child rearing and stuff. Do you have any suggestions what somebody would do in that kind of situation?
Yeah, I mean, it's such a great question because it really comes up all the time. There's some industries that are a lot easier to have, you know, a full life outside of work, and some that just feel like they require you to be there all the time. At the same time, I always like to say there's no bad industries, there's bad bosses. So if you have a boss that's expecting you to be working around the clock, be working all weekend, be working nights, and they don't respect their own personal life, it's impossible that they'll respect yours. So it's really important that you choose the people you work with carefully if you can, and that you try to create your own boundaries. So it used to be that, you know, we lived in this 9-to-5 culture where we could count on our companies to set those boundaries for us. We would leave work at 5 o'clock and show up again at 9 the next day, which obviously led to a very nice balance mm-hmm. in our lives. Mm-hmm. But now that we have phones, you know, the blessing and the curse is that we're expected to kind of be on at all times. Yeah. So it's really up to us to set those boundaries. It's not, we're not dependent on our companies setting them for us anymore. I mean, if you shut everything off at 5 o'clock and returned at 9 a.m. the next day, your industry might have changed. You might have lost your job. I mean, everything could have changed in that time. So it's up to us to figure out, okay, so I'm with my family, let's say from 6 to 8 p.m. and you mm-hmm. socialize that at work. You say, you know what, 6 to 8 is my family time. And then at 8 o'clock, I'll be checking emails again. And here's my home number. If there's an emergency, call it. They never will, mm-hmm. but it just makes people around you feel better, right? And you can say, here's the deal. I'm going to leave at 5:30 on every night unless there's a deadline, in which case I'll be the first to stay late. But on a typical day, I'm going to definitely be leaving mm-hmm. at 5:30. And then people are less likely to throw that last minute project at you at 5 o'clock or ask you to join a meeting or try to schedule conference calls late. It's difficult in the beginning to set those boundaries, but it's really important for the people at home and for your colleagues.
I think it's also, it's funny, it's very industry specific. I come from the law firm culture, which is client service, and traditionally that's, you know, it's very hard to set those boundaries. Yeah. But that industry, you know, is evolving also because it has to compete with other types of businesses. So,
yes, and one of the biggest problems I'm sure you see is like when one woman drops out who is an attorney in a mm-hmm. firm, it definitely affects all the other women in that firm who are coming up behind her. Mm-hmm. I'm going to speak in Philadelphia at a big firm, and the woman who hired me was explaining that there's just so few women at her level mm-hmm. that it makes it so that she's just like the Lone Ranger, and she has 4 kids and she feels this responsibility to all these other women who are looking to her. And she's like, if I left, it would literally be devastating to these women. Like, they're so dependent on me, but it's right. such a shame for her that there's not, you know, 20 more of her down the hall.
Right.
So true also in the entertainment industry. Boy, I work with a lot of clients, producers and actors and such. And boy, when they're on production assistants, they like never stop. Costume yeah. designers, there's no
it's
end
so true.
To it.
I mean, the
so
one
challenging.
Nice thing is I try to get people to redefine how they think about work-life balance. It's not necessarily 50-50 every day. You know, some days are going to be 100% focused on work, and then the next day you might be completely off and you can focus 100% on your family. So a lot of it really is going to depend on how you see it. You know, for example, I travel a lot for work, but when I'm traveling, I'm like completely gone, right? Mm-hmm. I'm gone for 3 days in a row. Everything at home is taken care of by my husband or my babysitter or friends who are helping, whatever it is. And then when I'm back, because of my schedule, I'm able to do all the pickups and drop-offs and be totally in the game mm-hmm. for the next week. So for me, that's a great work-life balance. You know, that makes my kids feel like they're completely the center of my world when I'm home. Mm-hmm. And I also share with them my work. I mean, one of the mistakes that I see a lot of people making is not sharing their work with their kids. So when they're going out the door, they're saying, oh, I'm so sorry, I have to go to work. I know, I wish I could be with you, as opposed to saying, guess what mommy gets to do today? I get to be on this radio show and I get to meet these really wonderful women and I can't wait to hear about your day and I can't wait to see you at dinner and talk about what we each did.
That's a great idea.
Different approach. And you'll see that when you do that, you know, your kid is not clinging to you as you're walking out the door because that's a great idea.
I like that.
You know, when you have a choice.
I love that.
Yeah, I really like that too.
I mean, I really involve my kids in my work. And I remember just a few months ago, I was leaving on a business trip in the spring. And I was leaving my daughter's room. And I said, Ella, just so you know, I'm going to be gone by the time you wake up because I have a really early morning flight. So let's say goodbye now. And everything seemed to go well and smoothly. Mm-hmm. And I'm walking out the door. She goes, Mommy. And I thought, oh, no, like the guilt trip's coming. And she goes, do you think careers will change a lot? Jobs will change a lot by the time I'm an adult? And I said, I mean, I guess some industries will, some mm-hmm. won't. I said, why? And she said, because when I grew up, I want to do exactly what you do.
Mm.
And I was like, oh my goodness, you know. It's if she saw me always apologizing for my career, she would never feel that way. Mm-hmm. I think it's because she sees me enjoying it and sees me proud of it. And it allows my kids to be proud of it too.
It's amazing. I absolutely love that. I feel like I'm going to use that for sure.
Yes, I hope so.
So can you tell us a little bit about what made you write the book? Were you constantly hearing these questions or how did it come about?
Yeah. So I graduated from business school and a couple things happened at the same time. I graduated from Harvard Business School and over the next 5 to 10 years saw so many of my really incredibly talented and well-educated classmates dropping out of the workforce. And at the same time, I was running a personal branding firm in New York that was focused on CEOs and experts. And what I realized over time is that you couldn't talk to someone about their personal brand without talking about this elephant in the room, which was how they were managing their personal and professional lives. So for the CEO, it might have been like a failing marriage. And for the Olympic athlete, it was financial distress. For one of my experts, it was something with their parenting style that wasn't working. But there was always this invisible brick wall that was holding him back, and it was usually personal. And so I started to dig in and thought, what is going on here? Mm-hmm. And, you know, we have experts for meditation, and we have, you know, Tony Robbins to help us think about, you know, how to motivate for the future and think about our whole self. And we have all these people teaching us to do yoga, but we had no one talking about work-life wellness. Mm-hmm. So I really just dug into it and spent about 6 years researching it and working with, you know, so many people on it. And I really figured out that one of the problems is that we have no really healthy framework for how to think about work and life. We talk about, you know, work-life balance, which really refers to a scale. And if you really have a thriving career, you're never spending an equal amount of time at work and at home. So you're failing at that. And then we talk about juggling. And anyone who's ever had to try, you know, had a conference call with a baby or a toddler in the room knows that's not possible. You know, and then we talk about having it all. But at the same time, we can't point to anyone who has it all.
Right.
So we have no framework that was healthy to think about it. So after working with all these women, I realized that there's pretty much 7 slices that we're all involved in. And so I thought of it as a pie, and everyone is a fully baked pie. They just need to access all of those slices, and the slices change over time. So you might today be spending 40% of your time in your career and 30% on your relationship and 20% on your friends. And then when you have kids, that changes. And so the sizes of your slices ebb and flow over time. And a lot of people will say, oh my gosh, I don't even have a slice for my hobbies or for my friends. And I always say, just make it a sliver today, even if it's a sliver. And it exists on your pie chart, you're going to set a goal for it. And the goal could be small. It can be calling a friend on my commute once a week and reconnecting with an old friend. Or it can be, you know, putting in a date night once a week with my husband. Or doing something with like a girls' night out once a month. We're going to have a book club. They're really small, specific goals. It's not like I really want to have a relationship this year.
Sure.
Right? Like no one's going to fall on your windshield tomorrow. We need to say you're going to do your online dating profile. Like very, very specific, tangible goals, which are going to get you towards, you know, towards achieving in each of those areas. Sure.
I love what you're saying. Oh, sorry.
No, go ahead, Debra. It's okay. I'll go after you.
Oh, I love what you're saying. It reminds me of, you know, sort of the stock market and your diversification of your investments. And they change over time. You might be in higher risk things when you're younger, and
that's
then
funny.
You know, sort of mellow out. So I love that.
Yeah, no one's ever made that analogy,
people.
But I love it. Yeah.
When you were talking, I was thinking about that video that Christina actually sent to me. There was, I'm sure you've seen it, the news anchor.
Yeah.
On
BBC.
Right. I was like crying, like literally tears streaming. My husband and I probably watched it, I'm not exaggerating, like 7 times.
It's so relatable.
It's so relatable. And I analyzed everything.
Of course.
Because the mom, I think she was in the bathroom, the poor thing.
She had her pants down.
Yes. Yeah. She was literally going to the bathroom for 1 second. And the 1 second she goes, and then the child, you know, stomps in,
right?
And he's like mortified, and then the baby rolls in. It's the best.
It is the best.
Right?
When the baby rolls in. It's just heavenly.
It's
yeah.
so funny, it's but hilarious. It's so relatable because I think we've all been there.
Although I felt
all
really,
there.
I thought they were a little harsh on the kids. It kind of bothered me.
Oh, really? You mean when he was like frustrated? Or
I thought, you know, if he had just rolled with it, he would be considered like a superhero dad. You know what I mean?
I see
like
what
he
you're
could
saying.
Have like. People would have like worshipped him if he like was like, you know what, just sit on my lap and like let's do this.
Right.
Like he could have handled
right.
it in many ways, you know.
I was actually impressed because I remember at one point he was like, and he like took a breath, and I was like,
oh,
all right,
so funny.
Yeah, like I was like, all right, he's trying to keep it together,
funny.
You know.
Oh, yeah.
So it is funny, yeah. So all right, well, tell us more. I mean, about society, I guess. Like, do you think that society supports more parents in the workplace or more parents in the workforce? Like, I'm curious your thoughts.
So I do think things are changing, and I think one of the best examples of that is parental leave. So it used to be called maternity leave. Whenever I hear that term now, I cringe because as soon as you have maternity leave and not paternity leave, the dad starts out, you know, 500 hours behind in the parenting department, and that never, he never catches up. So we really, it's really important that we have parental leave. You know, I always recommend to women that in the first week after giving birth, you find an excuse to have to go out and help your sister for 3 hours or whatever it is. Just leave your partner alone for a large chunk of time so that they get used to realizing, oh, I can do this. I've got this, you know, because if they're never changing diapers or they're never really in the game from the beginning, it's hard to catch up. So I think parental leave policies are really changing, and that's exciting. That's it's happening slowly. And unfortunately with the current presidency, it's going to be even slower, but we, you know, I'm very involved in this topic, on the political level. And, I put together Kirsten Gillibrand's Paid Leave Coalition, where we have thought leaders around the country who are involved in paid leave. And it's really amazing how it's changing really fast. So that's great. So things like that are changing within companies are great, although it's a very slow pace. But and then the other thing is just, I think we talk a lot about things like the pay gap, but we don't talk enough about the retention gap. How do we keep women in the workforce? You wouldn't have a pay gap if you had a 50-50 workforce, period. And so that's really, like, we're talking about the symptom and not the problem. And to me, the problem is that women are dropping out of the workforce, you know, high-achieving women at the top of companies. And that is going to change policies. And that, you know, that makes it so that it is, their companies are all run by men, largely white men. So the more we can have diversity at the top, the more those policies will trickle down to families and to making it easier to retain female talent. But I do think that we're seeing a real sea change, even in Silicon Valley, how all these women are now coming out saying, naming names and saying, this venture capitalist harassed me, this person harassed me. That changes for everyone's perspective. I mean, I've seen people even on Twitter who are like leaders in the tech industry who never used to talk about women who are suddenly like having 50-50 lists when they send out a list of their favorite quotes or their favorite people to watch. They're watching their backs more, which actually helps. So I think that, you know, slowly industries are changing, and I think entertainment's next, but there's so many industries right now that are feeling this, like, this wave of feminism that's coming from a lot of different directions that's really helping change the workforce. So I'm very optimistic.
That's good. Yeah. What do you think? What are your thoughts?
I mean, I agree. And like I said, I come from a very, kind of, I would say, like an old school industry. But the legal world is changing a lot, and it's also being pushed by their clients, because clients want to see more diversity on their matters. So law firms have to respond to that. And in terms of parental leave, they've done a lot to, you know, to change their parental leaves from just a traditional maternity leave. And there have been great strides in that. And law firms have to keep up, because that's how they recruit people. They have to have similar policies.
Exactly. Like a lot, you know, I've heard from a lot of my friends who are at law firms where their clients will be like, why are there so few women at your firm? Or why do we have no one representing us? And I've actually said to a lot of my male friends, including my husband, imagine how the world would change if every time you hired a law firm, you said, I've noticed there's not a lot of women at the top, and I'll hire you as long as you commit to, in the next 5 years, making at least 40% of your top tier women. Like, that would change the world, right? If men started going to meetings and saying, I love to hire your firm, but I just don't see enough women at the top.
Wow. Isn't that always the truth? It's the opposite gender of who's being discriminated. If they speak up more, it has so much power. Instead of it being us to always being the advocate for ourselves.
It's not a women's issue, it's a people issue.
Right, yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. And unfortunately, a lot of men will say, like, I didn't realize this until I had a daughter, but that's fine. I mean, we'll take it. Yeah. But I think that, you know, in my house, I raised, I don't want to say, like, gender-neutral kids, but for the most part, we've raised our kids very gender-neutral. We don't think of things as boys' things and girls' things. And ironically, it's like my son is the one who can do a cartwheel, my girls can't. All because I've raised them gender-neutral. Like, I just never assumed my girls would like pink. I never assumed that my son wouldn't. And, like, because of that, we've just raised our kids in a way where I knew I couldn't change the fact that media and other things were so focused, so stereotypical. And so what I did instead was teach them to recognize stereotypes. So my son was doing his math book the other day. He's in first grade. And he looked up, he goes, Mommy, there's a stereotype in my math book. And I said, what is it? And he said, it says Joe weighs 77 pounds and his sister Sarah weighs 56 pounds. Why do they make the boy bigger?
Oh, interesting.
And I said, oh, bud, that's actually not a stereotype.
Right,
but
right.
Like, but good, you know, good uh-huh. thinking. But so, or he'll that say to his great. Friends, do you like pink and purple? And they'll say, yes. He's like, yeah, because pink and purple are not girls' colors. Colors are for everyone. Like, he is like...
Oh, that's so good.
We raise, like, a super
that's
feminist
adorable.
Son, super feminist girls. And so they just see the world in, like, we'll watch a movie, and I'll be like, God, I kind of like the Minions. I guess it was entertaining, but it really bothered me that there were no girl Minions. uh-huh. Like, why are there no girl Minions?
I never thought about that. Did you? I never thought about that. That's so funny.
Oh,
you're
yeah.
right.
It drove me bananas. So I notice it in everything we watch. So I'll always say to my kids after we watch something, gosh, like, I couldn't stand the way they stereotyped. Like, how could that uh-huh. girl run in heels? Or whatever it was. Like, you know, I don't know if you saw the picture today of Melania Trump showing up in Houston.
Just told you that.
That is so weird.
She changed when they got to Texas.
She was wearing 5-inch heels.
That's what you said. Mm-hmm. I need to see a
and
picture.
The bomber jacket.
Oh, right, yeah.
Ridiculous.
That doesn't bother me as much because if she wants her bomber jacket, fine. But, like, I think she can rescue anyone in those 5-inch
right.
heels.
Right. God, unbelievable.
Hey, let's switch over to nannies for just a moment because I know that that's, like, a really interesting and complex component for so many families. Like, I found that, you know, when I was raising my daughter primarily as a single mom, although her father was around to take care of her, we sort of shared a nanny, and we didn't use the nanny to replace parenting. We just used the nanny as sort of a collaborative, she was actually became part of the family. We all kind of divided up the tasks and the chores and all that stuff so that my daughter actually had, like, a community helping to raise her. But I think a lot of people have misconceptions that nannies are going to take over and actually become the desired parent. But that has so much to do with how you organize that.
Yeah, that line of discussion of saying, like, I don't want someone else raising my children is such a load of, we have a child in the room, so I'm not going to say anything.
It's
but
fine.
It's ridiculous. And I think that, you know, it's at the end of the day, you're the parent, and there's only one parent. And mm-hmm. no one ever grows up and says, you know, my nanny was my mom. It's just not how it works. And so at the mm-hmm. end of the day, if you have a strong family culture, that's what your family is about. It's not about a babysitter. You know, my husband actually is the one who often will say to me, you know, it's so funny that people think of babysitting or nannying as parenting. He's like, because the thing is that during the day, there's tons of manual labor. When your kids are little, it's like all manual labor. And then mm-hmm. at night is when, like, the real work happens. It's like mm-hmm. the real interaction of having dinner together and, you mm-hmm. know, putting your kids to bed or whatever it is. Like, that's the meat mm-hmm. of the job. And the other stuff is, like, taking your kid from place A to place B. And, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of the manual labor stuff is, like, less parenting. And what happens if you're a stay-at-home parent is you're so exhausted by 5 o'clock.
Yes.
You know, as soon as you're saying, I can't wait for my 5 o'clock Chardonnay, your life has gone in a terrible direction, right?
Yes.
So it's like, mm-hmm. how are you, you know, that's that. Because uh-huh. by 5 o'clock, that's when your kid really needs you for homework and for
right,
all the
sure.
stuff. And discussing what happened that day in school.
Yeah.
And you're exhausted. And I don't blame you because you've been
right.
on duty 24/7 mm-hmm. for the last 8 hours. Like, it's all you've been doing. So
right.
by the time 5 o'clock hits, you're so exhausted and you're so impatient and you're not giving the best of yourself to your child. So I always say if you're even if you're with your kid 90 minutes a day, but you're totally focused on them mm-hmm. in those 90 minutes where they feel like they have your full attention, you're mm-hmm. really listening to them, you're not checking your phone, that's far more valuable than 10 hours of distracted parenting.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's so funny. As you were talking, I was thinking about, like, when I was a stay-at-home mom with my older son for the first year. And my husband would be like, okay, you know, I'll be home at, like, I don't know, 6:30. And it'd be, like, 6:31. And I'd be, like, gripping the couch. And I'm like, get off! You know, and if he'd walk in at, like, 6:33, it was, like, steam, you know? Because
right.
it's like you're just so – you want that relief.
Yeah.
It's hard. So I can relate, yes.
Yeah, that's funny. I understand.
So Deborah, so you asked about the nanny. Do you have any questions, Christina, specifically? I don't want to hog the radio show here.
What about splitting responsibilities with your spouse? What are your thoughts on that? Or, you know?
Yeah. So, I mean, I've never seen any woman reach her potential who isn't with a partner who fully supports her dreams. So it's not possible. You know, I always say, like, you're better off being either a single mom or partnered with someone who fully supports you. Otherwise, in between is really, really hard because it's exhausting your life anyway, right? Mm-hmm. And if you're pulling the weight 90% at home with childcare or with household stuff, it's really, really hard to have the energy for your relationship, for your friends, for your mm-hmm. work, for anything. And so you're really not giving the best of yourself to any area. So I have a chapter in the Pie Life called The Partner Shift, which is all about how to turn your spouse into a partner. So if you are in a 90-10 relationship, you can turn it around. Mm-hmm. Assuming you've married someone rational or partnered sure. with someone rational, you can make that change. Mm-hmm. And a lot of the times when I'm like, you know, in the past I've been brought in to help families or whatever, what I've found is that the woman who hires me will expect that I'm going to be like, oh, he's the worst, right? Mm-hmm. But a lot of times it's her low expectations that are creating the situation. Mm. So, you know, I was with a family who she was always complaining, he never helped, they're so traditional. And I was with them, and he said, they were over on a Sunday afternoon, a friend of mine, and he said, by the way, I'm on the way to pick up my mom at the airport. I have time, so I can stop at the supermarket and get you whatever you need for the week. And she was like, oh, no, forget it. You would never know what to get.
Mm.
And I thought, oh, my gosh, at that moment, like, she stopped him from asking to help next time.
Right.
Oh, my gosh.
We do
that. Totally just enabling the dysfunction, right? Enabling not learning how to do something, especially with diapers.
Yeah. Exactly. Like, a lot of people will be like, oh, my husband would never change a diaper. In earshot of their husband. And I'm like, well, now he definitely won't.
Right,
like,
exactly.
He's stereotyped as this buffoon.
Right,
he's not going to change,
you know?
So a lot of it's like, don't call it babysitting when your husband's with your kids or, you know, with the guys with the kids. It's not babysitting. It's parenting.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, so we make those mistakes in our language and just our behavior all the time. But if you start from the beginning expecting that you're going to be sharing responsibilities, then your relationship is a lot healthier mm-hmm. and more sane. And I always say, like, in a partnership, if you're ready to do that, you're like, really, you should be ready right now, because there's no good timing. And people always say, oh, well, tonight's a really bad night because my son's birthday is tomorrow or he had a big presentation today or whatever it is. And it's like, there's never an easy time to have a difficult conversation. Mm-hmm. So, you know, do it tonight and sober your favorite beverage. If it's, you know, a whiskey or a cup of tea, whatever it is, mm-hmm. sit down together and say, like, I feel like I would have more time for, I feel like I don't have enough energy for us.
Yeah.
And that's always a good way to start, you know, because it's about them. Mm-hmm. And be like, I feel like I'm just so exhausted all the time. I have no energy for us. And I feel like I don't even know all the things you do for our family in a given week. And I feel like you don't even know what I do for our family. So I would love for us each to, like, sit down and write down a list of all the things we do. And I do think you'll be surprised at how much your partner ends up doing that you didn't even realize.
Mm-hmm.
And they'll certainly be surprised by your list. And assuming you've partnered with a rational human being and they see your list, you know, this long and mm-hmm. their list is a fraction of that.
Right.
Just like if you had a colleague at work with the same job title, you would expect there to be a reconfiguration, a redivision of labor.
Mm-hmm.
You sort of set that up with them. And it's not going to be 50-50 every day. You know, some weeks will be 90-10 and some weeks will be 40-60 and it's going to change over time, and that's okay. And mm-hmm. that's how it's supposed to be. You just hope that it kind of evens out in the wash.
Yes. I can totally see that. Yeah.
I like that too, that it's not necessarily that distribution by task, but more like distribution by time, because that's what we all want more of, right? Is to have more time to spend on the other things. And so just because somebody does, you know, three tasks, if it takes 15 minutes and my one task takes 10 hours, not a good deal.
Mm-hmm. Right. And this becomes a really tricky issue when money is involved, because if one partner is the only breadwinner,
mm-hmm.
it's really hard to have that, you know, to make that argument of we should be doing 50-50 because you step into these very traditional roles. And then, you know, there's all these statistics that show that daughters of working moms earn 23% more as adults than daughters of stay-at-home moms. And that's not a surprise mm-hmm. because you're modeling what you see.
Yeah.
So, you know, none of us raise daughters and say, oh, my gosh, I really hope I raise a financially dependent daughter one day who marries well. I mean, we don't do that. Right. But then at the same time, we model that at home.
Uh-huh.
And so we have to sort of be focusing on what we're modeling. So we're all better off if there's two breadwinners and, you know, mm-hmm. there's a way to just have a more egalitarian relationship, that your sons and, because sons of working moms end up helping more as adults and having more equal relationships.
Oh, really?
And sons of stay-at-home moms uh-huh. because they see that they think that their wife is going to work. They assume that they're that they're going to be part of supporting that.
That's nice to see.
So it's important.
Tell my son no. He's not doing anything. I need more around the house.
So you
but this is good to also highlight, though, that, you know, for people who are listening who did opt for being a stay-at-home person, a lot of these principles still apply in the sense that you're still trying to create a balance of other things in your life that you enjoy and want to contribute to society in some way. Maybe it's not about making money, but it might be about volunteering, or it might be about, you know, helping at your child's school and things like that, that also give you a sense of independence, self-worth. Do you agree with that?
I do. I mean, unfortunately, what I see over and over and over is there's two things I see. One is that more often than not, something unexpected happens, a divorce or a death or a job loss that puts the family in a financially vulnerable situation. And it's very difficult to go back to work after 10 years off. No one wants to hire you.
Yeah.
So that's why I always say, just keep your foot in the door. If you have a spouse who's traveling all the time and you can't possibly have a full-time job, just have a part-time job. Just do something that makes you employable.
Mm-hmm.
Same thing for, you know, what ends up happening is that our job as parents, if you think about it, is to raise kids who fly far away from you, who are very comfortable and independent and, you know, successful on their own without needing to text their parents every second from college, right?
Right.
Like, that's the dream, right? Yeah. It's like to raise a child who flies away from you. But if your job is your child, then that's antithetical to the goal, right? Because over time, if you're raising a healthy child, they're going to fly further and further away and need you less and less. So you're basically getting fired over time from your job.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why, you know, sometimes the working parent will be like, you make your own lunchbox. And the stay-at-home parent will be like, well, that's my, like, this is a big part of my job. Like, I'm not going to just give that up, right? Mm-hmm. And so it's this tricky thing of we place a lot of importance on things that maybe could be done by our kids. But so we end up in a situation a lot of times where we're really vulnerable, where we now feel like, okay, no one needs me at home. My kid's with his friends when he's not at school, and I have nothing going on, and I want to get back to work, but it's been 15 years. So there's nothing. So this woman chased me out of the 92nd Street Y last year, and when I was talking, and she afterwards, she said, I just want you to know that I live in a very affluent community in Connecticut. And when my kids were little, I had the moms coming over to me all the time and saying, I'm so sorry you have to miss everything. That must be so hard for you and so awful. And she said, those same women today, now that her kids are teenagers, say to her, I am so jealous
that
you have a job.
Right.
I would die to have something to do. And so I think we don't think long term. We think that those baby years last forever, but those 0 to 5 year marks, they're really, like, they fly by.
Sure.
And before you know it, your kid's in kindergarten full time, and you have a lot more time on your hands. And so I always say, if you can just keep your career going in some way during those maintenance years, it's not the time you need to leapfrog 3 levels. You just need to keep it going during those really hard, sleepless 5 years.
Yeah. One thing, as you're talking, I'm thinking about something I loved in your book, because I could see this happening with a lot of people. You talked about how your daughter wanted you to come to her performance, and you had scheduled a talk then. And so you thought of, okay, you know what I'll do? Could we do a dress rehearsal? And I absolutely loved that. And she was so excited. And you felt like you gave her, you know, that time. She felt like you were committing to her. And it was like a good compromise.
Yeah. I mean, I obviously have the same struggles that any other working parent has. And, you know, in this particular case, we just moved to LA from New York. And my daughter, you know, got in the car after the first day of kindergarten, so excited about her kindergarten play. And the first thing I asked, of course, is like, when is that play? And she tells me the date, you know, or I look up, she didn't know, and I looked up the date, and it was on the same day as a big talk I was giving. I think it was the Massachusetts Conference for Women. And it was, you know, thousands of women at this conference, and I committed 6 months earlier. There was no way I could move it. And I, for weeks hearing about this performance, I could not break it to her until I had a plan. So I approached one of my working mom friends who is traveling the most, and I said, oh my God, I have the worst situation. She goes, oh, that's nothing. I've missed birthdays. And I thought, oh my gosh, I would never miss a birthday. So she's like, this is so easy. You just go to the dress rehearsal. And I thought, oh my gosh, why didn't I think of that? Mm-hmm. So I show up at the dress rehearsal, and the irony is that there were 4 dads at the dress rehearsal. Apparently they all have that memo that we didn't get, the dress rehearsal memo. So there were 5 of us there. Yeah. And then my husband videotaped the whole thing. So, and then, but I will say that, you know, like a month later, the video came in the mail.
Mm-hmm.
So we'd pop in the disc, whatever it was. And Ella goes, Mommy, do you see me looking around while I'm singing? And I said, yeah. She goes, I was looking for Dad since you weren't there. And I thought, oh my gosh, I thought
we got through this. Yeah. Exactly, right.
You know, ironically, at the same time she was performing, I was up there giving a talk on work-life wellness. So it's like, you can't win. I mean, there was a time on my book tour that my daughter was sick. I had to leave for the speaking engagement in Minneapolis. And it's always hard to leave a sick child, as you know.
Yes,
today,
exactly.
Right? It's so brutal. Mm-hmm. So, but she was really, like, had a fever and was, like, had to be home, was really sick. And I said, you know, I'm so sorry Mommy has to go to this trip, but, like, you're all set. Daddy's coming home at 12. Like, it's all set for you, whatever. And she's like, I'm okay, Mom, whatever. But I felt so awful. Like, get to the airport, and I'm, like, good at compartmentalizing. So I'm like, okay, I'm here. I've just got to focus on what's ahead of me. Everything's fine at home. So I'm in the air, I'm, you know, working on my laptop, whatever, and suddenly my phone starts ringing, and I didn't even know phones rang in the air.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, I'm in coach middle, and my phone is ringing, and I look down, and it's my daughter's school. So I'm like, oh my gosh, so I pick up, and of course, now everyone's staring at me, like, whose phone is ringing on the phone,
right.
And I can answer it? Like, and I'm like, hi, and it wasn't just her school, it was my daughter, it was my oldest daughter, not the one who was home sick, and she goes, Mommy, it's November 1st, you didn't order us lunch for the month, and I have no lunch.
Oh.
Okay. She goes, and Mom, if I have no lunch, that means Bowen, who's her kindergarten brother, has no lunch too. Oh. So then I'm in the air. Like, I'm like, what the hell am I going to do? I'm in the air. Oh. I have two hungry children and one sick child at home.
Oh,
and I'm
God.
Going to give my talk about the pilot. But I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm a fraud. This is horrible.
Right,
you know?
Right.
They ended up eating Cheez-Its, and they were fine.
Exactly,
but,
right.
But, like, it was one of those things where, like, I, like, was crushed. You know, I'm, like, frantically trying to reach my husband.
Yes.
I'm, like, going crazy the whole flight. And at the end of the day, like, it happened once, and they were fine. And,
right.
Like, all the other days they had lunch, and they were fine. But it's probably hurt me more than them. You
sure.
Know?
But I love your authenticity, because I think we can all relate.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, even when I remember, like, when Remy was young, I remember, like, not, you know, closing the car seat and completely forget it and being like, oh, my God, what's wrong with me? Like, you know, and that was, like, the big deal then. But, like, yesterday, I forgot the snack for both of my kids. Yeah, so it's, like, it just happens. It's
like,
life.
You're human. Exactly.
Yes.
And, like, they'll forget their homework sometimes. And just, like, you forgot the snack. And it's, like, I'm always like, oh, gosh, Mommy makes so many mistakes. I mean, yesterday, I was taking my kids for back-to-school shopping. And it was just one of those days, like, it was just so hard. And I think that the dynamic of having three kids in a shoe store, they all have their own needs of, like, what they want for shoes. So they're always all trying to get my attention and whatever. And they're both all like, you're not looking at me. You're not focused on me. I'm like, you know what? I like, turned to them. I lost it. I was like, you know what? Every other person in the shoe department has one child with them.
Yeah, exactly.
Like,
this is why Zappos is so great.
Right,
Zappos
exactly,
is great.
Exactly.
I can't do
I went on Zappos
stores
today.
Anymore.
Yes, this morning I went on Zappos to buy the rest of what we didn't
get. Yes, exactly.
So, but I had no childcare yesterday, so I was like, this is a good activity for us.
Right.
We'll get something done and go to Nordstrom's. It'll be fun. And we'll go for ice cream after. Anyway, so they're there and they're freaking out at me, and these people around us all have one child, and it looks so easy. And I turned to my kids and I was like, look around you. Everyone else has one child. I have three right now. And I said, I am sure there are some magician mothers who can make every child feel like they're the center of the world when she's with three kids at a shoe store, but I am not one of them.
Yes.
I am so sorry.
Yes. Did they get it?
Well, one of them goes, oh, I hate when you say stuff like that, Mom. The other one goes, me too, as my son said. And then they were so much better after that, because I was like, listen, I'm sorry. I would love to just focus on you, you know? And then, of course, I woke up saying to my husband, from now on, I'm taking one at a time. And he was like, that's just so impractical. That's never happening. I was like,
online shopping.
I know,
yes.
Exactly. But I like the act of it. In fact, there's this woman I've interviewed in my book named Jane Friedman, who was the CEO of HarperCollins. And she is remarkable. She was a single mom of two sons running Harper. I mean, was the CEO of HarperCollins.
Wow.
And at the time when she was a single mom of two. And she said that every night she felt like she had to be out every single night, because if an author could write a book for her imprint, she sure as hell could have one drink at their book party. So she would go to each of their book parties for a drink. So she said every night she would come home from work, have dinner with her kids, and then go back out again to a book party every single night without fail.
Wow.
And the one thing that she had, like, certain things that were important to her, she could never let the nanny buy them shoes. That was her thing.
Oh, interesting.
So she always took them shoe shopping. It's just that always sticks in my head. Every time I go shoe shopping, I think of her. But the other thing that's interesting about that is that her son is now 42, and he's a friend of mine in Los Angeles. And I say to him all the time, like, so what did you think of your mom's career growing up? And he's like, I mean, there's no one I'm prouder of in the entire world. Wow. I am so proud of my mom. It's like, aww, I talk to her twice a day. I'm like, she's the coolest mom in the world.
Oh my God, that's
and
so
I think
nice.
Most adults are not as close with their mothers. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we sometimes mistake time spent mm-hmm. as the quality of the relationship. But
yes.
It's not the case.
Yeah. Oh, I absolutely love hearing that.
Yeah.
Oh, beautiful.
So I have a question for Kelly and Christina, and then I'd love to hear your input also, Samantha. So, like, when my daughter was young and being a working mom and, you know, a professional and also a writer and all those things, I really was an advocate for teaching her how to do chores really young, like really young. She was already doing, capable of doing her own laundry at 8 and other things. Yeah. But in this generation, since both you, Kelly, and
I'm just thinking like I should put Remy has been wanting to listen to this whole radio show, and I've been pushing him away, and now of course this is something that he needs to hear. Come here, I want you to hear this, love bug. Dr. Deborah's talking about chores. Come sit down, love bug. Okay,
did
go ahead.
Lose him?
Yeah, go ahead. Sorry about that.
Yeah, and so I was curious because I found that to be really, she was very judicious about keeping her room clean, and I thought it was a really good skill. But I hear so many parents who, you know, their kids are already teenagers and they're so afraid that they're going to get behind in school if they don't do, you know, if they have to do chores and they don't give them, or just tasks around the house. It's not even chores. This is kind of a community effort, how we keep this house together. So I was curious, in your generation, Kelly and Christina, what do you do with your kids? Because you have similar age kids, and what's your thinking about that? And then, Samantha, please chime in and give us some feedback.
And what age
feedback.
Are your kids?
They're the same ages.
Yes.
So 8
funny.
And 4.5.
She's got twins. But
the 4.5-year-old twins and an 8-year-old.
So it's really funny. Yeah. So I'd like to hear this, Christina.
Yeah. I mean, in our house, they're very, very different personalities.
Yeah.
And my daughter is very much into doing chores. She's taken it upon herself to, you know, put the ice packs in the lunch boxes in the morning and line them up and put them in and put them in the book bags. You know her.
Yes.
You can see this. My older son, you know, he'll sometimes take not the parental position, but you know, he'll say, "Well, I'm not going to play with his younger brother until you brush your teeth." And then my younger son just rebels at every stage.
Well, that's what I was going to say. See, Deborah, I think, I think it's personality driven. Mm-hmm. Like, I think a lot of young girls are more nurturing and more willing to sort of help.
I'm gonna disagree with that stereotype.
Okay. Well,
yeah,
I guess
me
in my house.
Because she didn't want to. It wasn't like she was fond of it.
Oh, she
it
didn't want to. Okay, so you made her.
Forth.
Oh, okay. Well, then that's a different story. What kind of chores do we have? Because we only have a minute, but, you know, a couple minutes left. But what kind of chores do you do, Rem? he's whispering. I think he's... Well, now you clean the hamster cage, right? Once a week.
Not by myself.
Nice.
He's proud of this. This is so funny. You guys wipe and clean the table. You switch off. You in London every night, which I think is very
that's
important.
Great. Yeah.
Sometimes you put your clothes away. But I think we can do a little bit more. You are much more capable than you think, right? So, yeah, that's what we do. But, yeah, I would love to hear your thoughts about all this.
Oh, I mean, I think this is one area where I'm also weak in. And I think it's part of, like, the overparenting generation that we're a part of. I call it overparenting.
Yes.
But it's also just, I think sometimes when you're in a rush and you have multiple kids, are like, you know, it's just easier to do it myself, which is
right.
so bad
yes.
because it's so much better for them to do it themselves. But
yes.
I get in that. We're like, I'll
right.
just dress you
yes.
or whatever it is.
Right.
You get that. I'll just pick out your clothes. And it's so funny because my daughters have very, very different personalities. And today I said to them, you all have to get yourselves ready, blah, blah, blah. And pick out your own clothes and do everything yourself. And I'll just like, we'll meet downstairs at whatever time. And my middle child is picking out the clothes for the older daughter and bringing them to her and putting her stuff in the hamper and doing everything because my older one is just not, she's like a mad mm-hmm. professor. She's mm-hmm. like buried in something. She doesn't
right.
like, think, she's not like super, super on top of like organization stuff. My second one could like run the world. And
oh my
so,
God, so
what's so funny is she's just like uh-huh. basically helped my older one get away with all this stuff because this
She'll
is her strength
her.
And she mm-hmm. she likes to do it for everyone else. And my son is much more mm-hmm. like the middle child. He likes to do things
wow.
too. So he helps me pack That's like one of our things that's we cool. do. It's like he's a Packer. And that's then good. Like, but I also, I sort of continue this chore conversation to other things. Like when we go out to dinner, I make them each order for themselves in the restaurant. Mm-hmm. There's things that I feel like they can be doing.
That's good.
That mm-hmm. it's like, or else they'll say, can you say to someone else? Like, no, you say it. Or like, I've done you that know, too. Yeah. And like my oldest daughter was painfully shy as a child when she was, you know, a toddler. And I would never make her say hello to anyone because for her, that would just make it worse. But then finally, when she was like 5 or 6, I'm like, you know what? Like, now you're at an age where like you just have to do basic niceties. Yes. So like when you meet someone, you always have to shake their hand and look in their eye and say hi and say, hi, I'm Ella. And she literally, it's almost it was like in the beginning, it was robotic. Now it's not at all. But it was literally like training. Mm-hmm, and I think sometimes we lower our expectations too much. And like our kids are capable of way more than we think. Give them. Yeah.
So we are almost out of time. I can't believe it. Can you tell everybody where they can find you and your book and all that media stuff?
Well, we didn't even get to talk about, I have a new product, which I brought to show you. It's called the Pi Life Planner. It's a motivational paper planner with like, it tracks everything from how many hours you slept the night before to how happy were you. Like on the day I'm on LA Talk Radio, I'm, you know, a 5 out of 5 as opposed to, you know, not wanting to leave the covers, which is a 1. And it also, it has like quotes from famous women and just little pieces of advice on each page. So that's been really exciting. It's my first ever consumer product, and it was kind of an offshoot of the Pi Life.
That's great.
So it's called the Pi Life Planner. And then the Pi Life is also available on Amazon, and there's an audiobook version too for any commuters out there.
Oh, cool.
And then I have a weekly newsletter, a work-life newsletter that comes out every Thursday that you can sign up for on my website at SamanthaEdis.com.
Awesome. Thank you so much. And
beautiful.
Next week,
thank you so much.
Thank you so
and
much.
Christina, thanks for showing up.
Thank you. And really fast, next week we have Laura London. She's the host of Rescue Dog to Super Dog on Animal Planet. So that should be super fun. Thank you guys so much.
Woohoo. Bye-bye.
You're listening to the Dr. Deborah and Therapist Kelly Show, only on LA Talk Radio.